Okay, wonderful. We've got this event back up and running now, which is good. So this is our new link. I'm just going to share that link from both of our Twitter accounts, so we can reach people with the new link as the last one shut down on this wonderful Twitter platform, which we are, of course, very happy to be using. But hopefully now we are underway and we'll be able to be joined in due course by all of our listeners. So I'm just going to pause my microphone for a minute or two, add our panelists as panelists, and share this link from our other accounts. Thank you. Hello to everyone. Thank you for joining us here via this new link. So we're just getting our event underway. Sorry, we're a little bit delayed as we had some technical problems with the last link, but this one seems to be working fine, which is good. I can see Claire from the Freedom for Öcalan campaign and Razia from Abdullah Öcalan's legal team. We've been able to add a speakers in Milan as well. That's wonderful. We have also here with us already Nilüfer and Paula. I've sent both of you invitations to speak. You should be able to accept that invitation, and you will then be able to join the conversation as well and contribute. And I can see we have some of our guests joining us here now as well, our audience in the conversation. So we're just going to take a couple of minutes to keep sharing this new link and adding everyone in to make sure we've got all of our listeners here. And yeah, if those of you who are speaking on the panel are able to accept the invitation to speak, then we will be able to hear from you in due course. So thank you very much, and do bear with us. Okay, wonderful. So it looks like we now have most of our speakers present here in the chat, as well as our audience. We have people still joining us. And so, yeah, as we're a little bit delayed, then I think we can get started in the next minute or two with our event. So thank you all for joining us and for making your voices heard here in this space. This is, I think, the fourth Twitter space that we've organized here with Meji News. We had a great conversation about a month ago where we were joined by a number of guests in the aftermath of the dreadful earthquake in Turkey. And that was a great opportunity to hear from people. We heard from Jeremy Corbyn, and we heard from a number of Kurdish politicians from the representation of the HDP political party in Europe. And that was a wonderful opportunity. And that meant we had to push ahead this conversation that we planned to have with our legal delegation and contributors to now, to a month later. And we're very grateful to all of our speakers for agreeing to join us here and to share their expertise and their observations from their delegation to Turkey. It's really wonderful to have them all here. And so I'm just going to say a few words to introduce the discussion and to introduce our panelists and our contributors. So this conversation is happening to look at, in particular, the continued incarceration of Abdullah Öcalan, and then also the broader situation surrounding the legal crisis in Turkey, the judicial crisis in Turkey, and the incarceration of political prisoners in Turkey. So we'll go on to the delegation and our guests who participated in that event in just a moment. But I think to begin with, it's better to have an introduction from Asrin, from the Asrin Law Office, Asrin Hukuk Boro, which is the legal office which has represented Abdullah Öcalan since 1999, so almost for a quarter of a century. And we're very lucky to be joined today by Razia Öztürk, who represents Abdullah Öcalan as a lawyer. And she can first of all begin by giving us an overview of his situation. So Razia, could you please speak for us, if you can unmute yourself and share the latest legal and humanitarian situation. Thank you.
Okay, good evening for everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. First of all, on behalf of the Asrin Law Office, I'd just like to greet all our guests with respect. On the occasion of this program, we would like to express our gratitude once again to the international delegation which traveled to Turkey from various countries in Europe and across the globe to observe in situ the total aggressive isolation imposed on our clients, Mr. Abdullah Öcalan, Hamidi Yıldırım, Ömer Hayri Konar, and Veysi Aktaş, as well as the effects of these restrictive measures on Turkish society more broadly. Undoubtedly, the most important step we can take is to discuss what should be done and what we can do to challenge these conditions. Since the time we have will not be enough to express thoroughly the extent of the unlawful repression that has been going on for 24 years, I would like to briefly summarize the latest situation. You may find more detailed reports regarding our clients on our website and our Twitter page. As you are like aware, Mr. Öcalan was brought to a prison on Imralı Island in 1999, after being captured following a coordinated operation by international intelligence agency. Imralı prison was previously a semi-open prison before it was emptied in February in 1999. At the time of the Öcalan abduction, it was then re-engineered to be a high-security one-person prison. With Öcalan's arrival, the area around the island was declared to be inaccessible by air, land, and sea. Since its establishment, Imralı prison has been governed through discriminatory, extraordinary, and inhumane measures through the imposition of indefinite administrative status. There have even been certain laws that were legislated specifically in order to prevent Öcalan from benefiting from his inalienable rights. These measures, known as the Öcalan laws, were brought into the force all over Turkey. As we speak today, Öcalan remains imprisoned in a cell-type room in Imralı. Along with him, we have three other clients detained in the island prison. They are also kept in separate cells and isolate in the same way as Öcalan. This isolation is so extreme that our clients who were brought to prison in 2015 have not been allowed to see their lawyers even once in the past 8 years. Mr. Öcalan has had only 5 meetings with his lawyers in the 12 years since 2011, all of them concentrated within a single year, 2019. The last meeting was in August 2019. This is despite the fact that according to Turkish law, lawyers can meet with their clients at any time during working hours and without being subject to any permission. During his 24 years in Imralı, Öcalan has been able to use his right to communicate with his family on the phone only twice. The first call was in 2020 due to the COVID pandemic at the time. The second call, which came in apparent response to social media posts that raises concern about his life and well-being, lasted for only 2 minutes until the phone disconnected. In this phone call, Öcalan objected the rejection of his rights to communicate into a single phone call, stating that the law should be enforced and the lawyers should be allowed to come to meet with him before the call was abruptly disconnected. Since this last phone call on 25 March 2021, we have been unable to receive any information from Öcalan and the other prisoners, with no lawyer or family visit, no phone calls, and not even a letter.
Okay, marvelous. Thank you, Asrin. Thank you, sorry, to Razia from the Asrin Legal Office for giving us that initial overview of the situation affecting Abdullah Öcalan. I'm sure people here are aware, but it's good to be reminded of where we're up to, and we will hear later on a bit more from Razia. Yeah, but first, as we mentioned, then the original purpose of this conversation was following on from a legal delegation which travelled to Turkey in January of this year, focused around the detention of Abdullah Öcalan, but also the broader legal and judicial situation in Turkey. There was, I believe, around 40 primarily lawyers and also lawmakers from across Europe and even beyond, as far as South Africa, who joined that delegation and travelled across Turkey to meet and speak with lawyers, with political prisoners and their representatives and civil society actors. And so I think, yeah, we have at least two members of that delegation with us today. Perhaps I can first of all invite to speak Milan Martin, a lawyer from Germany who participated in that delegation. And perhaps you could just share, you know, what you did, where you went, and what were your main observations on the ground?
Yes, thank you for inviting me to the talk. I have been part of the delegation and international delegation to Kurdistan. In fact, we were three delegations in total, three groups, one in Kurdistan in Ahmet, the other two, one went to Turkey, to Ankara, and the other to Istanbul. So we had different subjects. I just can talk from the from Ahmet. We met with a lot of organization. Our point were more to see the political and social issues, what the isolation of Mr. Öcalan has, or the impact it has on the different on the society, because for this it was totally new, because we always we know what happened, that the imprisonment is now 24 years. We know about the restrictions he has to suffer, but for me also to see, to have a look, to speak with people and different NGOs, and they telling us the impact it has. The impact, what I mean is, we always have to imagine that there is, Mr. Öcalan is a political leader, the political leader of the Kurdish people, and there is no connection between him and the people he is representing. And so this, for first, what everybody is telling us, there is no chance of peace. We can't make peace without Mr. Öcalan being in prison, because we can't, we don't, to make peace, there is, our leader has to be free first, and then we can start the peace progress. And yeah, this was one, I think for me, the first new thing, but what for me was really a big impact to see that all the implications the imprisonment has for the society in Kurdistan. And also then in talking with organizations who are trying to support other prisoners, in other political prisoners, and they are, when they told us that now the imprisonment, the rules they put on Öcalan for the imprisonment for the prisoners in İmralı, they also start to put these restrictions to other political prisoners in across Turkey. So now this method of isolation is, they do it more and more to other political prisoners. So this was like what we had more like a political social view on these things in comparison to the delegations in Ankara. And I don't know if somebody's from Ankara or Istanbul is also there. We met in the end in Istanbul for one day, so we could share everything, what we experienced, what we want to do in now in the future. And now we have a report, and we want to share this report in public. So that's what a short thing for the beginning.
Yeah, thank you, Milan. I think you kind of touched on there that this delegation came at a time of extreme kind of political and legal pressure in Turkey. As we know, it's not just Abdullah Öcalan, but also other Kurdish political representatives who were facing severe legal harassment. What was the kind of sense when you were there and you were speaking to Kurdish lawmakers or Kurdish lawyers? Is there a kind of growing crisis in Turkey in terms of the attacks on particularly the Kurdish opposition?
Could you repeat the question? I didn't understand the question that good.
I just wanted to ask about the kind of current political situation and atmosphere in Turkey when you were there. I know that now, in addition to Öcalan, the HDP and other Kurdish opposition figures are, of course, facing legal repression. What's the kind of general legal climate in Turkey today?
The legal climate I experienced there, what lawyers or NGOs were telling me. Second, what we also in the end were experienced, or we experienced for sure. For lawyers, it's I can share some small stories. One story was a member of Mebiader organization and NGOs. This was just shocking for me. They told us this organization is trying to get back bodies from that combats. So sometimes it takes years to get back the dead bodies. The people who are working there in this NGO were also facing criminal accusations because of their asking for the dead bodies. So what one story they shared with us was, for example, I don't know, this was also in the news, maybe some people of you already heard about. A mother was looking for the son. She was charged because she was looking for the bones, for the dead body. And in the end, in the court, the police went and gave them a plastic box full of the bones. So it's just when they told me the story, I was like, I couldn't believe it. And lawyers who get kicked out of the court because they were just trying to make a legal point and say, no, that's illegal what you're doing. And then in the end they got beaten up from the offices in the courts. Things we couldn't imagine here in Europe, it's okay for sure it's not okay, but in their mind it's okay to beat up a lawyer. For me it's totally intimidating to hear something like this. And other thing, one, and at the end I was telling about the meeting at Mediader, and before we met with them, the leader of the coup chairman of this organization, where some people on the streets were talked to her what we are doing and that they aren't allowed to meet with us and what they are telling to us and what our purpose is. And after this meeting, at this first they told us, look, they already know what that we are meeting. And after this, we were in front of the hotel and they started to make photos. People on the streets started to make photos from us. So this point, I was really... This was the last day of the 4 days in Ahmet. After this, we took we went to Istanbul. So I was happy to come away from this, because it's really, really intimidating. Also, always having helicopters or also airplanes flying that low above the city, and you just have the sense of this war situation, I think. So it was in the end you have to say what now the Turkish state is doing. It's has nothing to do with legal rights or human rights in fact with Öcalan, but also the people, the Kurdish people in general, and they're just ignoring human rights, and it's getting worse. What everybody's told us is it's getting worse in comparison to a few years.
Indeed, yeah. Thank you, Milan, for those observations from the ground. I think it gives a real sense of how overwhelming and total the kind of scale of fear and paranoia and repression is on the ground in Turkey. I should say as well, if anyone who's following as a listener would like to submit questions to any of our panelists, you can just write them on Twitter. So just reply to the event link, reply to our at @MediaNews_ account, and we'll pick those up. If any of our speakers want to add something or add a question or ask for any more information on what the other speakers are saying, language permitting, that would be very welcome, of course. Maybe now, before we go any further, I think it would be great to bring Nilüfer Koç into the conversation, who is leading Kurdish political representative based in Europe for the umbrella platform KNK. And Nilüfer, maybe you could just explain for us about the kind of concrete threats being faced by the Kurdish movement legally around the upcoming Turkish election and the efforts to ban the HDP, and what's the situation right now? Hi Nilüfer, can you hear me? Okay, I'm just going to check that Nilüfer is receiving our messages and is unmuted, so we can hear from her. But while we're while we're working on that. I think will be a good opportunity then to hear some more maybe from Ocalan's legal firm, from the Astrine legal firm. And maybe we could invite again Razia to speak. And Razia, I wanted to ask you, you've explained the situation for Ocalan. What are the concrete steps being taken right now on the European level to challenge Ocalan's isolation?
Okay, thank you again. To put an end to the present situation, where Ocalan is being held incommunicado in detention without any access to information, we applied to the United Nations Human Rights Committee on 29 July 2022 as a last resort due to the exhaust of all domestic avenues, including the Turkish Constitutional Court. In our application, we also requested an injunction against the destruction that prevented us from receiving any type of information from Mr. Ocalan and the other three prisoners, despite all the persistent attempts of their families and lawyers to reestablish contact in the 2 years since 25 March 2021. The OHCHR urged the state party to end the highly restrictive detention condition imposed on the applications, allowing them complete and unrestricted access to a lawyer of their choice. However, Turkish government authorities didn't comply with the committee's injunction. On the contrary, the government's response to this decision was the further prohibition of family and consul visits. Instead of repealing the ban of phone calls and meeting with lawyers, it openly defended these prohibitions in its responses to the committee, despite the lack of legal grounds to do so. As Ocalan lawyers, we still continue to pursue all legal pathways toward protecting our client's rights, but we are also still prevented from seeing him and even from seeing the documentary pertaining to the unlawful and arbitrary bans and disciplinary punishment placed on our client, which are being unlawfully hidden from us to prevent us from examining their content. Thus, our clients' cases are finalized and implemented before we can object. 24 years of legal efforts in Imralı have led us to the inevitable conclusion that environment completely governed by politics where universal law is not applied at all. Besides, the silence and ineffectiveness of institutions such as the European Court of Human Rights and EU level committees to prevent torture further encourage Turkey. For example, the ECHR has our application regarding the isolation. Although we made this application in 2011, the ECHR has not delivered a judgment on Ocalan's case for the past 12 years. The ECHR has stated that the aggravated life sentence given to Mr. Ocalan in 2014 is against the prohibitions of torture and that some amendments should be made in the law on the execution of sentence. Turkey didn't implement this decision in 2014. Likewise, the Committee of Ministers, which is the supposed to implement ECHR decisions, put this issue on its agenda only 2021, 7 years later, and has not reached an effective decision so far. Another council institution is the European Committee for the Prevention of Torture, CPT. In 2019, a CPT delegation visited the Imralı Island. It releases a report in August 2020 describing the situation in İmralı and the extent of the isolation of Öcalan, while underlining that the Turkish government's stated reasons for isolation are deceptive. CPT emphasizes that aggravated life imprisonment, which means imprisonment until death, is torture, and this sentence should be altered. Despite the CPT's proposals on providing family and lawyer visitation rights, ending disciplinary punishments, and increasing the right of fresh air exercise and the social activities, the government took a step further regarding the isolation of our clients, intensifying restrictive measures still further. During the last 2 years, which have been marked by an absolute lack of communication with Öcalan, the only incident of note was the CPT announcing that they visited the İmralı prison on 22 September 2022. However, in our meeting with them following the visit, CPT official refused to give us any information and avoided making any statement. In actually, the CPT has the power to initiate a procedure against the state that do not comply with their recommendations and to make its observation public without government approval. Nevertheless, despite the 2 years in which there has been no communication with İmralı and the fact that CPT is the only international authority that is allowed to visit the island, they did not share a single piece of information, citing legal procedures to justify this approach, and even threatening what goes on in İmralı Island prison as if it were normal. As such, the CPT has shown they incapable of signing any change in the island. These examples show that, in addition to the national İmralı policies implemented by the Turkish authorities alone, there is also a comprehensive and systematic İmralı policy which is being conducted in the murky context of USA, Turkish and European relations in the international area. Within reality in mind, we can summarize our key aims and strategies as follows. First, exposing the unlawfulness that exists in İmralı. Second, ensuring that the institutions such as the European Council, ECHR, Committee of Ministers, UN, and CPT, whose duty is to protect human rights, fulfill their duties. Third, enabling European institutions to use their legal prevent against the Turkey, encourage them to abandon a passive stance and exert their influence. And finally, as a result of this, abolishing the systematic imposition of the total isolation of our clients, working toward the goal achieving Mr. Öcalan's physical freedom. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing those insights about the struggles, not just in Turkey, but on the European level to achieve some change, even just for this one person, just for Öcalan, let alone all the other people facing repression in the Turkish prison system. I think, let's now then try again to hear from Nilüfer Koç. Nilüfer, if you want to unmute yourself, that would be wonderful. And perhaps you could share with us. So we know there are these problems with the CPT. We know there are these problems with the European institutions. How can we push for legal reform in Turkey? What steps can we take? Or yeah, if Nilufer, you're not picking this up, then maybe we can hear from Claire Boylan with the Claire Baker, sorry, with the Freedom for Rocheland campaign. We also have with us here on the panel today, Claire. Perhaps you have some thoughts about how we can push for from Europe, from the UK where you are, from Brussels for reform within Turkey. What steps can we take?
Hi, yes, hopefully you can hear me. Thank you very much for having me, and happy Newroz to everybody that's on the call today. I bring you greetings from the UK trade union movement and the UK Freedom for Ocalan trade union campaign. Matt just said, we just wanted to give some words on how we can push from Europe and the UK, and also why it's very important. This issue is very important to those of us in the UK and Europe, and why we should care about it. What's happening to Öcalan and within Turkey more generally is very important. It should concern all of us in Europe and the UK who care about human, civil, and worker rights, not just in Turkey itself, but in Europe as a whole, as the influences and the pressures that Turkey applies has a serious effect on the rights of people across Europe. The continued slide into autocracy and the attacks on human rights in the country has a huge knock-on effect to the countries of Europe. And you only really need to look at the situation around the accession of Finland and Sweden to NATO and the Turkish state's demands of them in terms of their support for the Kurdish people to see that the Turkish state is having a huge effect on the political direction of European countries. Sweden, for example, it had a history of neutrality and a great history of support for the Syrian Democratic Forces in northern East Syria, who are fighting ISIS. But this was just abandoned at the bequest of Turkey in order for them to join NATO following the Russian invasion of Ukraine. This capitulation puts the freedom and lives of thousands at risk and marks a real and fundamental change in the political direction on the continent. And we're also seeing this happen in the UK with the Turkish state putting pressure on our institutions and our political parties, and a clear move towards the criminalisation of the Kurdish community here. The labelling of people as terrorists, that's trade unionists, women's rights defenders, opposition politicians, human rights defenders, gives the Turkish state an open door to removing all opposition to their policies of oppression and violence, with very little or no international condemnation. This criminalisation and the labelling of terrorists of any opposition, it's extremely effective in ensuring this international silence on the human rights abuses that the Turkish state commits against Öcalan, as well as against its own people and those outside of its borders. We can't obviously rule out the business interests that many of these countries have with Turkey, particularly arms deals with Turkey. So they do have a vested interest in not taking action, along with their fear of pushing Turkey further towards Russia and, of course, the refugee crisis. But by staying silent, the international community emboldens Erdogan and his government becomes more ruthless and violent, causing further instability in the region, especially in its military incursions into Syria and Iraq, and therefore exacerbating the refugee crisis and contributing to the rise again of ISIS. This must cause the international community far greater problems than if they ensure that Turkey abided by international law. Within Turkey, of course, we're seeing an out-and-out attack on democracy, free speech, and the values in society of equality, women's rights, LGBT rights, ethnic and race equality, and civil society as a whole. We know that there are thousands of journalists, teachers, public sector workers, opposition activists, Kurds, politicians, and trade unionists that are in jail for political reasons because that they stand for peace and for human, civil, and workers' rights. Post-Brexit, the UK government has aligned itself ever closer with Turkey, and many of our large multinationals also have a presence in Turkey. The recent attacks by the UK government on trade union rights, freedoms to protest, on migrants are, of course, not yet near the levels that they are in Turkey, but the trajectory is the same, and we must fight back against this legal oppression in both countries. The situation that faces Erdogan is one of the most extreme versions of what the Turkish state is doing to a large number of its citizens. His isolation is not just an isolation of him as a man, but of his ideas, his values that have inspired many around the world, but especially those within Turkey who want to see equality, peace and human rights. In the Freedom for Öcalan UK trade union campaign, we're very clear that it's crucial that Öcalan must be freed and allowed to play his role in securing an inclusive and lasting stability in Turkey and the Middle East. We know from our own experience in Ireland that if a big part of the population feels oppressed, people will always resist and fight for their rights and freedoms. So that in the end, people have to talk to each other to try and find a solution. And that is the only way to resolve this. Although the Committee for the Prevention of Torture and the European Human Rights Institutions have repeatedly pointed out and condemned the imposition on Öcalan of this state of isolation, no one has taken any real action on it, and the CPT continue not to insist on any resolution to his or any other political prisoner in Turkey. We see such hypocrisy in the international community. On Ukraine, they rightly condemned Russia's invasion while staying silent on Turkey, even giving Erdogan, ironically, a role as peacemaker. And then in the last couple of days, we've seen that the ICC issued the arrest warrant, again rightly, against Putin for war crimes, but there's been nothing against Erdogan. And we really have to wonder how they can continue to regain their legitimacy. The Kurdish people inspired by Öcalan made a huge sacrifice in defending humanity against the barbarism of ISIS. And as we see, this debt is not being paid back politically in the UK and Europe. So we must turn to civil society to keep the pressure on governments not to abandon peace, democracy and international law. And that's where trade unions, the biggest civil society organisations, really have a very strong role that they should be playing in this. The upcoming elections have the potential and may mark a huge change in Turkey. And they do offer a hope for the Kurdish people, for all political prisoners and for Öcalan himself. But whatever the outcome is of those elections, we'll obviously continue to advocate and campaign for peace and equality and for freedom within Europe and the UK of Mr. Öcalan, and so that he can play his rightful role in peace for the region.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Claire, for that oversight of the sort of very complex relationship between Turkey and between the West and Europe. And I think, as you illustrated very well there, then on the one hand, a non-democratic Turkey is very dangerous for Europe. But on the other hand, Turkish authoritarianism is kind of accepted by many European powers as a quid pro quo for some of the roles which Turkey is seen to play, both in terms of the refugee crisis, in terms of the situation with NATO and so on. So it is a real kind of morass and very difficult sometimes to see a way out of the situation that's facing Turkey. We do have a couple of questions people have submitted to us already by just writing their questions to our Media News account. If you're listening in and you have a question for any of our panellists, please do send our questions, and we hope to get to a couple of those as we won't go that much long over the hour mark. Perhaps before we come to those questions, I did also just want to ask Milan from the delegation to Turkey, what reforms are people in Turkey hoping for, or what are they looking for? What could change? Are they looking ahead to the election as maybe bringing a change? Are they hoping for pressure from the outside? What do people want to see change themselves within Turkey?
From my side, what I heard, what they want and what they need is different things. First, I would say they want Öcalan free. The second thing is, how could we as a delegation put pressure or help with that, with this issue? And for me, I have to say, I think there is, like the speaker before me already told us, there are so many geopolitical issues in this thing, and also for me, there's always, I have to think, every fascist regime like we have in Turkey right now needs an enemy, and the Kurds are the enemy for the regime, because this is the glue that sticks together the Turkish society, because And this is now when we are looking to, for in my opinion and what I heard, and when we are looking to the election, maybe there will be a change, but will we really have a change also in the thinking and the against the Kurds? If there will be a new government. Act differently through to the Kurds. So what I experienced and heard, I am not that sure, because the glue for the Turkish society, or part of the glue, is because the Kurdish society in itself is divided also. And so what sticks together, or what is the glue for all this, the different thinking, is, I will say, the hate against the Kurds, or their need for freedom and to live live in freedom. So for me, when a delegation of an NGO was telling us, look, you're like, every year we have so many delegations, or not so many, but at least one delegation coming, passing by, we're telling always the same story since nothing changed. For me, it was like, we as Europeans, sure, we can make pressure, and we can go to the European Court of Human Rights, or we can write reports about the issue. We can go to public, like right now, telling what we experience. But in the end, what can we really, really do? And I think this is a question I couldn't solve it, because there are so many other issues that the European governments are putting more importance than the freedom of Öcalan. Because I think, that's my personal opinion, I think the European Union, European states, don't care that much about Öcalan, and what they want is that the refugees are in Turkey. What they want is, like the speakers before said, Erdogan or Turkey is supporting the politics in Ukraine, and supporting the way the NATO is going, and as a member, sure, Turkey as a member of the old NATO, but sometimes not supporting that much. Yeah, but what I want to say is, sure, the people are hoping for change, but I don't think if there's really a possibility with this regime, and with this regime, I will say also another government in maybe in June, because for me there are too many other facts that are going against a changing to change the actual politics. That's just what I think.
Yeah, thank you, Milan. Yeah, so we do actually, that was one of the questions we've already received from the floor, was just that if there's a new government, a government led by the CHP, CHP, in the upcoming elections, will that make a change for the Kurds and for Kurdish political prisoners? And I don't know if, Nilüfer is possibly having some connection issues. So, I was hoping she could reply to that. But if, I don't know, Claire or yourself has any further thoughts on whether things will change following the election?
I think it's very difficult to know what exactly will change. What we have to be very aware of is that Erdogan is capable of anything, and we need to be our utmost vigilance in the run-up to this election. You know, obviously he's wanting to invade into Syria. And as a speaker before me said, you know, to attack this common enemy of the nationalism of Turkey, so of the which is the Kurdish people. So we have to be very careful in the run-up to this election. I would absolutely hope that if CHP get in and the, you know, the six are in power, that the isolation of Öcalan will end, and at least the beginning of a negotiation of peace could start. You know, I'm very, very aware that, you know, this is a group of six different very, very varied political parties with different viewpoints on the Kurdish question. But in order for this country to move away from the situation it's in at the moment, of a dire economic situation, a war with itself, a civil war with itself, something needs to be done. And Öcalan is extremely key to any solution. So I would very much hope that a new government would enter into talks with Öcalan to move the country forward.
Thank you very much, Claire. Yes, for that overview. We are moving now towards the the end of our conversation. I think we might still have time just to hear from one or two more of our panelists who have been dealing with some of the technical issues on this platform, for which we thank them. I think we are able now to hear, all being well, from Niloufer Koç joining us from Brussels. Niloufer, can you hear me now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, so yeah, maybe you can, I've asked you a lot of questions, so yeah, feel free to speak, and maybe you have something to say as well about whether things will change after this election, or if not, what kind of changes we can hope for the Kurds and the Kurdish political prisoners.
Well, we are now in the eve of the Kurdish New Year celebration, Nevruz. I therefore wish all of you a very, very happy Nevruz. You are right, Matt. We are moving now to a very critical stage of politics since the preparation for presidential and parliamentary elections in Turkey. And I think one of the preconditions of the Kurdish politics and also generally will be, of course, to ask for radical changes concerning democratization of Turkey. And this, we do believe, can just be, can happen through the solution of the Kurdish problem. And in this frame, for the Kurdish side, Abdullah Öcalan is playing a key role for ensuring Turkey peaceful and well, welfare in politics and life generally in Turkey. So there's a need to change the conditions and circumstances on the prison island of Imralı. So if really the opposition in Turkey, which is now acting close to the Kurdish politics, as we have seen in the last days, so there's a need to consider that any solution or any talk debates about the solution to the Kurdish problem will need the contribution, so the direct participation of Öcalan. So this is a clear condition of the Kurdish side, and it has been repeatedly said in the last the last decades. And I think now there are better options than before, since we have seen that the Turkish regime under the leadership of Erdogan is collapsing in all fields, in economy, in politics, also in social field. So there, I think there's a, from all sides of in Turkish politics, you see signs that there's urgent need of a system change in Turkey. And I do believe the only one who can give a perspective for a system change in Turkey concerning democracy are the ideas of Abdullah Öcalan, which he has already brought to the Turkish political agenda in 2013 until 2015, when when you remember, there was the experience of a time of political dialogue between the Kurdish people's leader Abdullah Öcalan and the Turkish government, and it was the time when in Turkey people really got the opportunity to speak freely, to organize themselves freely. It was the period between 2013 and 15. And the only thing what Öcalan was asking for in from 2013 until 2015 was the parliament has to raise the Kurdish issue. So he did everything diplomatically, politically in his speech and his talks with the representative of state and government, said, listen, the place where the problem has to be solved is the parliament. So that's why the Kurds and also all those who are seeking for democracy, democratic future of Turkey, they need to decide during the elections that we have a parliament in Turkey which really will be able to take over the century-old Kurdish problem. So, and by saying this, I think one of the preconditions of the Kurdish politics will be achieving at least one of the conditions. And I think now we have to push particularly Turkish opposition under the leadership of the Social Democrats and their coalition partners, saying if you are serious and honest in your political purposes, then you have to consider the conditions from the Kurdish side, which means when you're honest, then you have to do everything to open the gates on İmralı, changing the circumstances that Öcalan can participate directly in politics. So this is very important. And I think there are now better options since all have understand that the votes of the Kurds will decide whether for Erdogan or Kılıçdaroğlu or other candidates. And also the Kurdish votes will decide the color of the common Turkish, the future Turkish parliament. So, and that's why we say we have now the opportunity to give politics a chance. And for this, I think as a precondition, to say this repeatedly, the precondition is we need a sign whenever from the opposition particularly, they will make changes regarding participation of the Kurdish people's leader, Abdullah Öcalan. And I think all the works we have done in the last 20, all the struggle we have done for Öcalan's freedom in the last 24, that what was legal, the legal area, which about the lawyers and the members of the delegation have already told. But I think since the Kurdish problem is not a legal problem, but particularly political problem, the Kurdish question is a political created problem. And I think struggling from legal field, from social field, all of these parts of the struggle brought us today. And now I think there's a good option to make a change in the 24 years of total or solitary confinement, or the process of incomunicado, which Razia was mentioning. And I think we have to insist and strengthening, and I would agree with what Claire said, we have to push from the international politics. Say, whoever is interested to have democracy in Turkey, and I see also that Turkey under Erdogan is also challenging the European Union and the member states. So he becomes a very challenging partner of the NATO, as we have seen in debates of between Sweden and membership of Sweden and Finland. And we are now facing Turkey under Erdogan, which is not able to keep their promises and follow obey the obligations they have signed centuries ago. So I think not just as Kurds, but also in the international politics, more and more you hear voices. They say, well, there is a need of a change in Turkey. So that's why I think if we all agree that a solution to the Kurdish cause will need the leading position of Öcalan in this process, then whatever is trade unions or the political parties in Europe or civil society organization, wherever we organize, we have to put this as a criteria or the prior criteria for a system change in Turkey. And I think the elections can help to lead to achieve such a purpose. And I think we have all the option, the good the golden time now, the golden opportunity to put more pressure, particularly Indeed, the Council of Europe, which is really responsible, politically responsible for the conditions on the prison island of İmralı, and also the Committee of Prevention for Prevention of Torture, the CPT, and also the European Union, if they will give a green light by some changes, let's say sending, for example, immediate delegation to İmralı now, whether it's a delegation of international physicians or ensuring that the lawyers can visit Öcalan, I think that will strengthening all the powers in Turkey which who are really on their way to understand that Öcalan is vital for a peaceful future of Turkey. So, and I think all of us have the opportunity now to act more actively, asking changes for his changes on the conditions and ensuring channels for freedom. And I think these elections has a very strategic importance for us and for all those who want to get rid of this very racist and sexist regime of AKP and MHP, the fascist Turkish government. So I think we can use the opportunity. We all have enough experiences at the trade union in UK and also the lawyers, and we in the political field. I think if we could do more, and I'm sure there will be, we can achieve some results. That's what I believe personally.
Thank you so much, Nilüfer, for being able to join us and share your perspective. We are, I think, coming now to the end of our event. We've been going for about an hour. I'm just going to take one more question. Perhaps, Nilüfer, you can speak about this yourself. The question is about the condition for women prisoners, female prisoners now in Turkey. Are there a lot of Kurdish women in prison, and do they face particular repression?
Well, Erdogan's anti-Kurdish strategy, there's a special field also anti-women strategy, particularly anti-Kurdish women strategy, because I think you understand that the Kurdish revolution is a very has a very different character comparing with our other revolutions, because it's a female revolution. And he understands that the revolution of women is changing the Kurdish society in Turkey, in Bakur, Kurdistan, and which is affecting also Turkey. As we have seen, for example, the slogan of Jinjian Azadi, which was shaking already the Iranian regime, it is still continuing. A slogan which helped the people to overcome fear against dictatorship like in Iran. And Erdogan, we have seen that in Turkish parliament or in the streets of Diyarbakir, Ahmet, or in prisons, wherever the Kurdish women are in a permanent situation of resistance. So that's why there's a specific misogynic policy of Erdogan against Kurdish women. Let's say in the cells, we got a lot of reports from the organization of women, the Kurdish women's organization in Turkey. What they do in prison, for example, is when there's a space in a cell for 10 people, they're putting 30 women in one cell. And then also physically torturing women is a case. And then also verbal attacks, permanent verbal attacks. And also we have seen this in the Turkish parliament, when AKP parliamentarians are cutting, don't allow Kurdish women to speak as they want when they're shouting, the women. There's all, wherever you look, is a kind of specific discrimination against Kurdish women by the AKP MHP government, because it's a patriarchal ideology which Erdogan is trying to spread in whole Turkey, to make it to a culture. And closing all the association of Kurdish women after they close all the municipalities. So it's the strategy of Erdogan is a continuation of a century-old problem to weakening the Kurds so they wouldn't be part or become an actor in politics of Middle East for self-determination. what they did was a century long is committing feminicide in genocide. Means exactly we have seen in Sinjar in 2014. So next to committing genocide, there was a specific policy of feminicide, slavering the women, raping them, because I think what we as Kurdish women have shown all the dictators in our region, whether it was Bashar al-Assad or Recep Tayyip Erdogan or Reis in Iran, we say we are now the leading power of changing Kurdistan. A new free Kurdistan will just be a creation of the, by Kurdish women. So, and that's why imprisoning of women, and since there are more women active in politics in Kurdistan, particularly in Baku and also in Rojava, so the most imprisoned or threatened by imprisonment are women, whether it's social grassroots organizations or in political parties. So, and I think, as we have shown in Iran and Rojlat Kurdistan, we lost the fear against the dictators, whatever, in form of husbands, brothers, or the states. So, and that's why Erdogan is acting on behalf of politicians, dictators like him, say, well, if we don't kept them silent, the Kurdish women, they will change the whole region. So this is the reason why in prison or on the streets or in Europe, as we have seen the killing of three Kurdish revolutionaries in Paris in 2013, three women, and one of them was Sakine Johnson, founding member of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK, and then 10 years later, the killing of Emine Kara Evingui in Paris in last December. So you see, and then targeting by drones Kurdish female politicians in southern Kurdistan, in Sulaymaniyah, or in Sinjar, or in Rojava. This is happening systematically. So killing women, active women through drones. So when you when you summarize all the attacks, so you see there's a specific strategy of feminicide, meaning one side psychologically discriminating the women and other side also physical elimination of Kurdish women. So continuation of this policy is also happening in the prisons in Turkey and Baku, Kurdistan.
Thank you so much, Nilüfer. And yeah, it's very important, of course, to remember in these conversations the particular role, the particular challenges faced by Kurdish women, and also the particular role they play in challenging these systems. We could go on, I'm sure, but we have the aim to keep this conversation to about an hour, and we're very grateful to all of our panelists for joining us today. Just before we close, I don't know if anyone, Milan or Claire, you have any final thoughts you would like to share?
Yeah, first of all, after we go our ways now, I wish everyone a happy Newroz also. And besides of what I was saying before, that I'm not that hopeful that there will be any change because Turkish nationalism is like the state doctrine. I don't lose my hope that there are at least some changes in the isolation and from Imre Ali and the people imprisoned in Imre Ali. And so, and for sure, for me, it's sure, and I think everybody who's hearing there, we will fight for this, and let's fight for this together, and because I think that's we can't let the Turkish state do this illegal things, because it's totally against human rights, and it's not possible that they could it's not possible to let them do this anymore. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, Milan. Yeah, not an easy task, as you say, but we'll continue our efforts. Claire, you have a last thought to share with us?
Yes, I'll just be really quick. It's been really interesting to listen to the speakers, especially. From our perspective in the Trade Union movement, we are redoubling our efforts in fighting for Öcalan's freedom. His values are our values of equality, women's liberation, grassroots democracy, and peace. And he needs to be free in order for him to play his full role in peace in the region. And, you know, we put a lot of hope on this election and look forward to better days to come. And we'll continue to fight against this global system of oppression towards a just and equal world. Thanks.
Yes, certainly. Thank you so much, Claire. And yeah, as you said, yeah, sometimes seems very difficult when I'm personally, I always remember the fact that these negotiations were going on, being led by Öcalan. They can happen again, and things can change very, very fast, as we've seen time and again throughout the region, for worse, but also sometimes for better. So yeah, I think let us bring our conversation then to a close. I'd really like to thank all of our speakers, and yeah, especially for dealing with the little technical issues we had at the start, joining us today to contribute. I'd especially like to thank Razia from the Asrin Legal Organisation, Abdul Ocalan's Legal Organisation, for joining us and speaking up so bravely, when we really do respect their efforts, of course. Thank you also to Milan and to the other lawyers from the delegation, who we hoped would be able to join us today, but also had run into some technical issues. But we were very grateful to have their voices, and at the end, Milan spoke very well on behalf of them. So we'd like to thank Milan as well, and of those other members of the delegation who were with us here today. And then finally, thank you also, of course, to Nilüfer Koç for joining us from Brussels, and to Claire Baker for joining us from London to share their perspectives on the wider political and European aspects of this crisis that we're facing in Turkey. So yeah, thank you very much to everyone, to all of our panelists. Thank you to you all for listening. And as always, you can catch up on the MediaNews Twitter page, the MediaNews YouTube, and the MediaNews website for all the very latest on what's happening there in Kurdistan, in Turkey, and throughout the region. So thank you all again, and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.